keeps piling up, we'd like to play for you. And as for folks concerned about the Button Street shooting and about police misconduct in our community, please give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, if you have any new information about the Brian Andrus shooting. And if you have any other problems with police misconduct, give a call to SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now, at 475-2012. It's time now for you to educate yourself on broader, greener issues, on subjects that I always wish I knew something about, but never bothered to educate myself on, except when I happened to hear it coming over the radio on Uncle Dennis's show. You're going to hear about Earth First. You're going to hear some stuff you didn't know, and maybe a little bit that you did, and it's all going to be put in a way that is both entertaining and educational. Dennis, take over. FM in Santa Cruz. For the next 2.5 hours, you will be tuned to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, Civil Rights for the Poor here in Santa Cruz, with special guests to be announced shortly. Stay with us, and I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. This assumes we can get our equipment to work, of course. Having a little trouble with our stuff, but I think, yep, we're back.
Kennedy, Kobe, Chuck, a psycho, Belgian.
And that was Billy Joel. We didn't start the fire, and we're hoping to start a little fire here, though. In the studio with us, we have, well, let him introduce himself.
Yes, my name is Jorge Castro, and I've been a homeless citizen of Santa Cruz since 1980, officially 1981 when I registered for food stamps. I'm what I consider myself liberal, and as an observer on this planet, strictly. I never try to involve myself in any particular events or whatever's happening. I just try to remain an observer in life. Another thing is, I'm a realist, and on top of it all, I'm a survivalist, and I have been ever since the Vietnam War.
You've been a man who's lived outdoors throughout that period of time, right?
Oh, yes.
And in fact, that involves, in effect, often peacefully breaking a few laws that you have to break in order to survive, right?
My whole life is illegal. I've been camping so long now. I'm entrenched at Pogonip. The police have never found me, but then again, that's because of my Vietnam background. I'm a camouflage expert and the whole nine yards, you know.
Let me ask you this. You know, you have a lot of friends in this community. You know a lot of people. You've been here for over almost two decades, and longer, actually, because you've been coming back and forth from up north in Berkeley and San Francisco. How many people have your kind of expertise? Do you find it rare, or is it becoming increasingly common in terms of living lightly on the land and not getting involved with the police?
I consider myself an old-school hippie. I was let off the plane in San Francisco airport straight from Vietnam. No detoxification, no re-entry programs, no reorientation into society, nothing. They basically took my six hand grenades off my flap jacket, three on each side, and I handed them my AR-15, fully automatic AR-15, alias M-16, and all the rest of my armaments, and asked me to get on the plane, and you were going home, and that was how I entered the United States. I went from one gung-ho Marine, and I got let off at the San Francisco airport. I ushered into a taxi and dropped off at Telegraph Avenue in Berkeley, and that was...
Now you're in Santa Cruz. You're looking clean cut, you're wearing clean clothes, you don't look like any stereotype of a homeless person I've ever seen.
Well, but believe it or not, as well as I might look to a lot of people every day, thanks to the director of the St. Francis Soup Kitchen, every maybe Thanksgiving and Christmas and everything, Mrs. Lee Laboa, the director of this, she always made it a point to take me upstairs and let me take a couple of a couple of sets of clothing for myself as a present, and I've saved them over the periods of years that I've been associated with the soup kitchen since Peter Carota started back in 81 down at the flats. I used to help him unload the clothes, and I always managed to grab a few clothes. So I have plenty of clothes, but they're all donated clothes from the public, from the Santa Cruz citizens.
They look everything.
I know, they're sharp. I can't believe they throw them away.
That's the way to go, I think. I too, tend to go for those fashions, true and tried fashions, I guess I call them. Now, we have a number of topics you were going to discuss today. Is there one you'd like to begin with?
Yes. The pockets of homeless that are deeply entrenched out in their camps that are all alcohol-based type of sicknesses and stuff, and as the years go by here in Santa Cruz, they're becoming so entrenched that they're just being lost in the shuffle, and these are your original homeless group, you know, from back in the 80s, and half of them are dead. You know a lot of them. I've heard you speaking to a lot of them over the past, and they're the ones that worry me the most, because I've been the town drunk for the past 18 years now. And
seem drunk now, though.
No, thanks to Lee LeBeau and the good, kind judge Salazar, my hero. He's the only judge down there that I've ever seen as a fair and square dude.
I have to agree with you on that.
I made promises to them on my birthday 2 years ago that maybe I should just drop this way of life and reintegrate with society and the community. And it's working. It's been the most boring part of my life. Everything that I've known to be fun has always been a big drunk. And I miss them days and everything, but it's time to go on, and I have very good 20 years left, maybe. And I should take full advantage of them sober.
So you're saying your concern is about these folks who are your friends or your acquaintances, your colleagues out in the homeless camps, that I guess you were talking to me at the Homeless Community Resource Center a few days ago, telling me that they don't come in for services. They essentially live an independent kind of lifestyle. And you have some thoughts on solutions, or should we say services that could be provided for them that might attract them, or at least help them.
True, true, totally true. I said earlier that I consider myself old school hippie. Riots back in the 60s, all that stuff. Well, being the alcoholic I am, there was a pocket of us old school hippies that when they coined the term homeless, I guess in the paper that came out in the Sentinel back then, when I first read it, homeless, I felt so ashamed. I couldn't believe it. You know, what a ugly word, you know, homeless. And here I was, a decorated veteran from Vietnam. Hey, wait a minute. But no, it hurt. It really does. It's a very sickening term. But we were heavy into our alcoholism back then. And there was old school unit to that particular group of people. But with this, you know, with the separation of generations and stuff, at least back then when we were getting drunk in the 80s, there was always people like me that knew better than to do it on a 24-hour basis forever. We stopped and went sober for maybe a week and stuff. But as us old schoolers eventually died off or got so sick that we wound up in some rest home like Two Feathers and everybody else, it's looking really terrible. And the bad part is that because of their habits, these entrenched homeless people, because of their habits, they're not really wanted at the shelters. They're the ones that get kicked out, 86 for life, whatever. You know, and it's bad policy, and how do you bring them back in? As you provide more services for the homeless, more new homeless come. It's sort of a revolving door issue. And in the meantime, these pockets that are out in the woods get deeper and deeper entrenched into this homeless way of life. And I'm totally against making homelessness a way of life. It's not a way of life. There's a way of putting a halt to it. And then when I heard your debate with Mr. Rotkin, I know, but he's a hero to me.
Be frank now.
You know, the end of the 70s, going into the 80s, Mr. Rotkin, when I heard that you were having a debate with him, I said, is that guy still around? I was so happy because back then it was a no-growth policy, and I'm still for the no-growth, but then in a way, because I'm a San Lorenzo laborer, I kind of want growth, but I don't want San Jose Computer Valley moving over this hill and into our community. And they've done a pretty snazzy job holding back the tide. And people like Mr. Rockton are responsible for not letting that tide come this way. Mr. B. Smith.
Actually, we have a second guest arriving in the studio, the infamous B. E. Smith. B., have a seat in that kind of floppy chair over there. This is Jorge B.E.
We met. How you doing?
You're fine. And I listened to your seminar, and I didn't even know I was free until it's slowly coming to me, and I told you about my case, and that's coming tomorrow at 1:30 p.m., and I'm shaking. The police have really had me stressed out. I can't believe it.
Can Can we change from what we were discussing? Sure. Go ahead to that case since we have B.E. with us here. And just maybe you can give us some background, and then B, maybe you can give us some of your thoughts on the situation.
To begin with, like I say, I've been homeless, and I've been a homeless community member now for 18 years. And 2 years ago on my birthday, which was February 8th, I decided to stop drinking and rejoin the community, and I figured a two-year period would be sufficient as a temporary, you know, clean and sober period where I wasn't going to work. I was only just going to sit there and look at everything and take a good gander of what's going on. And I sobered up, and I'm doing all this community service. In other words, I'm like doing what the court orders you to do when you've done wrong. I do it as you know, 24 hours a day. I mean, you know. And so I'm a community service worker, sort of. And so I decided I needed a new set of friends and everything you're supposed to do as a rehabilitated alcoholic. One of the ways I cured my alcoholism was by going to the same bar that I had been a regular since 1981 at, off and on, and just sit there with all the drunks and the alcoholics and stuff and refrain from doing it, and it's working. It really was working great. So now I'm out looking for new friends and a new set of group of people to hang with and everything, and I'm seeing everything in a different light as a sober person. And I meet two outstanding guys. They're from New Jersey. They're new. They're almost like tourists, but they've been here like for about over 30 days. That's from when they tell me and everything. And we're sitting at the bar downtown, and I had gotten to know them for about maybe a month total. And we'd meet at the bar and then play pool in the back. And what I noticed about these two young guys in their 20s was that they attracted a lot of women, something that's been away from my life for 20 years as a drunk. I never bothered women because if I couldn't take care of myself, why lie to them like I'm some kind of big shot or something? And I just don't, you know, I have that much respect for women that I'm not going to bother them with my problems or lie to them and say I'm somebody I'm not. So I made these great friends, and then everything was great. Then I go invite one of them, me, my invitation, to go to Callahan's, which is a lot of motorcycles and rhythm and blues every night. Free, no cover charge there. So it's inexpensive, and I have $3 in my pocket, and yeah, I can buy a Coke. And besides, one of the new bartenders was somebody that used to pick me up as a laborer down at the San Lorenzo to help him unload sheetrock and stuff. So off we go. It was my idea. Here I am, and his friends and everybody said, hey, we'll meet you for about an hour and a half, about 10:30, over at Callahan's. His friend had a game coming up in the pool table with a beautiful young lady, and so he wasn't about to walk out with us. He wanted to go to his pool game back there, and we took off. And the most closest way of getting to Callahan's, the Asti, was crossing the bridge. You have to cross the bridge to get there. So off we go. We go out the door. We say our goodbyes. We know when we're supposed to meet with everybody, and here we go. Neither I nor him have any warrants. He's a spitting image of a good East, you know, New Jersey kid. He's with the union. He's an electrician. He's a journeyman. He's making, geez, what, I've never even heard of people making this kind of money, $1,000+ a week. And off we go. He has no crime. We've never been involved in any drug crimes or even related to any drug scenes or anything. And we're walking, and I'm bragging that we've got the best looking girls trying to get on our pool table to play partners and everything. And I actually knew some people that would have apartments, you know, a room in an apartment somewhere that maybe they can and perhaps pay half that much, which would still look good to anybody renting a room, $500+, you know. And that was a lot better than paying the $800 to $1,000 at the motel per week. So, I mean, $280 and up a week. So everything was all go. We were walking. Everything was fine. two normal citizens going somewhere, when out of the corner of this guy's eye, and I'm noticing as we're leaving the bar, his volume of his voice is going up, and then he's starting to sway a little, and I'm noticing that the fresh air is hitting this guy. Well, one city block later, and we're at the bottom of the bridge, or getting close to the bridge, he starts slurring, and he's walking, when it looks like he's walking towards a certain angle, when actually he's walking this way, you know, he's looking like, uh-oh. And then he spots three thugs, you know, down by underneath the bridge area, you know, off to the side there. He spots three thugs, three dealers, Hispanics. Three dealer Hispanics. They're looking at us, kind of like giving us that